Okay, recording in live. Ooh, Friday Night Fans. We're here again. Yay! Survived another week. Hello, right. Everyone. I am licensed mental health counselor and certified life coach Patrick Manette, and welcome to another episode of Friday Night Feels. Friday Night Feels is a show that focuses on a variety of wellness-related issues, such as mental health, addiction, health, stress management, mindfulness, and much more. The focus of the show is to create connection and to be able to talk about issues that affect us all and how to be the healthiest versions of ourselves that we could be. Each show, I invite a guest to come and join me and share their experiences. And tonight, I'm so excited to have the lovely Janet White join us. So welcome, Janet, to Friday Night Feels.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yay. So I'm just going to share a little bit of Janet's background. So she is a registered nurse, author, and certified coach. She's a devoted grandmother and loves sharing her passion for living a happy, healthy, alcohol-free lifestyle. Her story includes a long-term abusive married life, bout with cancer, self-esteem, body issues, and grief. Her book, Finding Bliss Beyond the Buzz, tells her story and shares her method for maintaining a healthy lifestyle. It highlights how eliminating alcohol helped her to discover her passion and finally learn how to be happy with her authentic self, imperfections and all. Today, she empowers women to be the best versions of themselves, and you can join her every Sunday at 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Facebook Live. So welcome, Janet. There's so much. Exciting. So we are representing two great states. So I'm in New York tonight, and you were representing the beautiful state of Florida. Right. And our backgrounds,
got the trees. That's right. Here we are. Look at us.
We were so connected that I put it on before we even talked. I'm like, Florida. So we were just chatting before we got. So you have some really exciting news, and no one else knows it. So this is breaking news on Friday Night Feels.
This you heard it here first, people. I just got published.
If congratulations. You can see it.
And and so it's very exciting. I've been working on it for quite some time, and just to hold it in my hand is so exciting. So.
Oh wow, congratulations. That's so I can't wait to get into it and hear more about it. So today's the day you received it. So you heard it first here on Friday Night Feels. I can't wait to be able to get a copy.
And
learn about your story.
Yeah. So you can actually get it on Amazon. It's already on there, but
Official people, it's official. It is happening. This is not a drill.
Yeah, I know. So my the reason that I got into I even decided to share my story was kind of like over the years we all go through a lot of different things. But I kind of have some big things that happened in my life. Like you could probably look back and name your, top five or whatever. But I was married to a very abusive person for many, many years. And when I finally got out of that relationship, it was, unfortunately it took, a gun to my head to finally get out. But I finally felt like I was living for the first time. And so that's been about 13, 14 years ago. And since then, I've been on this huge self-development journey. Like, who am I? What, I had been, beat down as far as just the negativity and the name calling, and, my self-esteem was really low. I had had that in my personal life. In my work life, I had gone back to school. I became a nurse. I got my master's degree, and I was climbing the ladder in the corporate world. So it was like things weren't adding up. He was telling me how stupid I was, but I was, moving forward in my career. So once I got that out of the picture, I started working really hard to figure out who I am and what I want. My mom died young and my sister died, and she was only 50. They were both in their 50s. And it was just like, Janet, you can't wait till you're, you've already wasted all this time in this toxic marriage, and you've got to figure out what you want to do when you grow up and do it,
Right.
So, and I just kept working and trying to figure out what it was that I wanted. But when the pandemic hit, And, you know, a lot of people lost their jobs. I lost my job. And it was like, you know what? I am so happy not working. This stressful, you know, they expect so much. I had my last boss told me, you know, oh, you need to work 18 hours a day. You need to be able to answer emails over the weekend. We expect this. And, I'm in a different place in my life.
Well, that sounds so inhumane.
Yeah. I think what it is that it was at that point where everybody was trying to keep their jobs. Right. And I mean, it was, you know, it was a crazy time. Right. And knowing there were no jobs out there, right. You know, at that, everything was shut down.
Right.
So, but anyway, it was the greatest thing that happened to me. But one of the things that I realized is that I was using alcohol to kind of cope, you know,
okay.
Especially after my sister died. I always like to have a few drinks, you know, socially, and love my red wine at night, thought it helped me relax, thought it helped me sleep. But after my sister died, I realized I was kind of dependent on a little bit more stressful days at work and just come home. Never drank during the day, never, you know, I wouldn't call myself an alcoholic, but it got to the point where, you know, I was gaining weight. I wasn't sleeping as well. I mean, all the things that happened. And then I had a grandbaby. My daughter had a little girl. And I said to myself, you know what? I want to live. I don't want to die young like my sister and my mom. I want to be around for my grandbaby. And I knew it wasn't healthy what I was doing. I was overweight. I was overworked. I was drinking too much. I mean, all those things. And I said, you know, I got to make a change in my life. And I completely changed my lifestyle. I started healthy eating. I got into exercise and yoga. And then I took a break from alcohol. And man, that made all the difference. You know, it's so hard in our society to stop drinking, because that's the one drug where, you know, I mean, if I was on coke, you wouldn't say, hey man, don't quit, you know, right. Just do one line a day.
Right.
Don't, you know, there's no need for you to stop.
Right.
But you know, when it's alcohol, it's like, well, you don't need to quit. What?
Yeah. You know, something's wrong with you if you don't have a drink.
Right. And you know, it's hard to be social, you mm-hmm. know, there's lots of stigma around it. Well, what was wrong with you? Why did you have to quit? You know, you poor thing, you can't drink. But what I've realized is all the benefits. I mean, it's easier to lose weight. I have more energy. I sleep better. My skin's better. I mean, you know, my liver works better. I mean, think about all the things that, and so I went through this challenge basically to try to go for a year without drinking. And it was pretty tough. And I talk about it, you know, in my book, how painful and how to get off of it. But once I did, I was like, man, after the year, I was like, well, maybe I should go back to having a glass of wine or having a beer now and then. But I thought, why would I do that? I feel so much better without it. So I think it's been a big part of my willingness to step out of my comfort zone. You know what? If I can do something hard like that, go against the grain, go against society, then maybe I can write a book.
Ooh.
Maybe I can become a coach. Maybe I can do some of these other things, you know? And so, yeah, so that's kind of the highlights of the story.
Right. Well, it's interesting that you say that about the, you know, about the stigma about drinking, because it's so easy. And what I see is the stigma of people who have problematic drinking. Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, you should just stop, as if it's just flipping a light switch. Yet when the people do stop, no one, you know, not no one, but the loneliness that people feel, like, you know, they go to barbecues, especially, you know, it's summer, or you go to a work event, you're trying to date, or, you know, whatever these different situations are, alcohol is almost always involved. And you have to, there are some people who can just say, I don't like alcohol, and that's fine. But if people, I find, knew you when you were drinking, then it's like you have to go into your deep, dark secrets as to why you're not drinking now. There's that humiliation I see that sometimes goes with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I think we're trying to change the culture. You know, there's a lot more people nowadays who are like me, who were a middle-aged drinker, loved to drink. I didn't drink any more than anybody else, but, you know, I just said, it's not for me anymore. I'm not going to do it anymore. And now there's alternatives. I mean, they're, you know, Sam Adams has a great, it's called Just the Haze.
Oh, I didn't know they came out with
yeah. one. It is a, yeah, like all the breweries now are even coming out with alcohol-free alternatives. I mean, it's a big movement, Patrick. I think, you know, society's starting to say, hey, I feel better without it. If I choose not to drink, I should still be able to go. I go sober dance. I go do whatever. I have my alternative. I choose whatever. And I think, you know, the way that this movement, it's not the AA, the alcoholic, that whole, you know, negative. This is more of a, I choose, we call it the fun side of the island, right? I mean, it's why not, you know, choose this? And people are better able to reach their goals. They, you know, there's just so many negatives to alcohol. People think, and you know, as a counselor, people think, oh, it relaxes me. It makes me feel better. It's a freaking depressant, man. It's not good for you.
Well, and you also said in your bio that in your book, you have a system that you use. And could you share a little bit about what that is?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, again, another first, Patrick, you're my so I'm so excited, but yeah. So it's called Pre-Cans and it's just a mnemonic that I use to keep me in check. And okay. So it is, the P is for your passion or your purpose. The R is for rest and recovery. E is for exercise. C is for connection. A is for the alcohol free. N is for nutrition. And S is for sleep. Because what you realize is with those are the foundation, if you will, of being healthy. And when those things are out of whack, mm-hmm. It affects all every area of your life. Right. If you are, you know, drinking, you know, a bottle of wine a night, then you're not going to sleep well. You're not going to probably eat well. You're going to pick a pizza instead of prepping food. You're not going to exercise as much. I mean, all the things are affected. And if you don't have, so I kind of address each one of those, what they mean, and they'll mean something different for everybody, and then I use this little system. It's my journaling every morning, and I have my little pre-cans there. And then I do a 1 to 10, and you know, every day is a different number because some days, let's face it, some days I do order the pizza and I veg on Netflix, you know, some days I do skip the gym. I mean, we're all human, but when you start looking and you see, you know, oh my gosh, no wonder I'm feeling like this. I realize when my sleep is a 2 or 3, because I've been out, stayed out, had a lot of things going on, or my nutrition is low, 4, mm-hmm. I've been eating bad. I can tell in my body. So I'm giving myself the best. I'm making my, you know, I loved your tagline, be the best version that you can be of yourself. Right. And that to me is how I keep, you know, keep a focus on it. It's a journey. Right. It's not, you know, it's not a perfection. It's not
a light switch.
Right. But it does help you because it keeps you, you know, like focused on the things that are important and will make a difference. So that's kind of my system.
Wow, that's wonderful. Now, is that part of the coaching that you do, or is that something totally different?
Yeah. No, it's part of the coaching. So my coaching, I got my certification in October, and I'm really still, you know, kind of, I've had lots of clients with different, you know, needs, I guess you'd say. A lot of them are women. I think I kind of draw people that are, you know, like me in the second half of life, who are tired of putting themselves last. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they find themselves, you know, they took care of their kids, they took care of their husband, they did whatever, and here they are. They've only got this much life left. I mean, you know, out of the, you know, you're born and I hope I have quite a few years, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's not, you know, I have less than I had, and mm-hmm. it's time. If you want to do something with your life, this is one life. You get one precious life. And if you don't, I mean, you can't just keep hoping that one day you're going to do something. You have to make time to take care of yourself. So most of them have been like women who either have been putting themselves last, they've been workaholics, working way too much, or they've been putting everybody first and not taking care of themselves and feeling, you know, bad about themselves. I've got one client who was, you know, dealing with weight issues. I've got another client who is trying to quit drinking, you know. So, you know, I think health and wellness, you know, that's kind of, I'm not like specialized necessarily, but it's to me, I think now with the book coming out, to be able to share like I am here,
right,
you know, and talk to people and, you know, maybe it'll work for somebody else.
Right.
I don't know.
Right. Spreading those seeds of hope.
Yeah.
Well, and it's interesting, you know, I just kind of wanted to go back to something you said, where it's, you know, sort of an alternative to maybe AA, which even though, and I know that that saves people's lives and it changes, for some people, it's not the right vibe. Like, and it's hard, you know, because I'm always looking for someone who might say, for resources, who might say, you know, AA or NA really isn't, you know, I'm looking for something, but that isn't it. So hearing, I love learning about different programs and approaches of saying, hey, maybe try this and maybe this is the right recipe for you. And yeah. I think it's amazing and inspiring that you are speaking to a population that I think gets negated a lot and invalidated of. Okay, like you're saying, not only is it the second half of your life, but also being a woman who maybe has spent her whole life with other people, or, you know, empty nest syndrome or life changes. Like, we talk about midlife crisis a lot with men, but I think women have their own, like, hey, my life is half over and, yeah, you know, my kids might be gone or my job, I might lose it. And the struggle that I see sometimes, like where alcohol becomes that consistent companion, and yes, the struggles to acknowledge, okay, this is becoming problematic. This is affecting my health, but also, is it affecting the relationships with the people around?
Yeah. And, you know, I think our society, again, you know, not to blame, but, you know, women are really being targeted. You know, you think about the mommy juice, you think about the fancy cocktails, oh, yeah, with think about cupcake wine and the cosmopolitan, all the fancy drink. I mean, they're marketing to women, and on TV, everybody's got a wine. I mean, it's just what you do. And if you, and I think people have normalized it so much. I thought to myself, as I did so much research on what alcohol does to your body and how it affects you. And I mean, we all know it's not good for us. And I remember trying to find studies, Patrick. I would, like, you know, I'm a nurse, right? I know these things, yeah, but I'd be trying to find these studies, and I'd find one study that would say, oh, red wine's good for your heart. I was like, whoo, yeah, 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 I can drink. Yeah, yeah.
Heart healthy, you know. Heart healthy. Right. And even that mentality of, like, if I just had that one study, I can justify it.
Right. So, but I would try to get those studies and to convince myself and make myself feel better, knowing that, you know, drinking three glasses of wine at night, you know, was not healthy in nobody's heart, you know, and, right, and the glasses, you know, I mean, it's just a joke. Yeah. And today, now, new studies are coming out that say no amount of alcohol is safe, and more women and men are experiencing liver disease at a younger age. I mean, drinking has, you know, it's, and I think it's because it is so insidious. I mean, it's just, you can't go anywhere without it. I mean, it's every ball game, it's every social event. And so I thought, gosh, why would our society do this to us? But then when you think back at cigarettes, I don't know if you're old enough, you're pretty young, but, you know, back in the day, cigarettes were on TV, people smoked in the hospitals.
Yeah.
I mean, and our society, you know, billboards and magazines, and everybody smoked. And then finally, it took the culture to say, this is killing us.
Right.
This stuff is killing us. This stuff is bad for us. And they had to combat that. And I think that's where alcohol is now. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think people don't even realize how much it does affect your body.
Well, it was funny, because as I was getting ready for our talk tonight, I was kind of just thinking about, you know, even the last 2.5 years. And I remember having conversations with people across the board of, when everything was shut down, liquor stores were still allowed to be open. And, you know, because I think people were afraid that people might go into withdrawal or freak out if they didn't have it, and restaurants were able to do it. It was such an interesting thing to observe, that you know, with everything shut down, people were overeating. I mean, I know I did. Like, I was like, oh, I don't know what to do, so let's order burger and fries. And right. then you can get alcohol delivered or alcohol to go. It was interesting to observe.
It's essential. It's essential, Patrick. Gotta have it.
It was really interesting.
And people really drank a lot during the pandemic. I mean, there was nowhere to drive to. Mm-hmm. There was no, you were working from home if you were working. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in the 12 o'clock noon became the 10 o'clock or the 5 o'clock became 3 o'clock. You know, I was already off alcohol by then. I've been no alcohol for 3.5 years. So I'm thankful because I probably would have drank a lot during that pandemic time. But you know, I mean, I'm not saying that everybody needs to be a teetotaler. I'm not, you know, and most people in my family drink, you know, my husband drinks and people around me drink. I just, for me, moderation was not working. And it was harder for me to say, okay, I'm just going to have this baby glass of wine, you know, one, 3 times a week or whatever the, you know, the studies keep changing, like I said, but even if it is 3 times a week, okay, can I have it today? Oh, well, what about a beer? Can I have one beer instead of 3 drinks? I mean, it just got, and then it was almost like I was battling with myself to try to, you know, oh, how much should I drink? Should I drink this? And it when I quit and actually gave my body the break, the benefits, the sleep, just being able to sleep 8 hours a night, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning with heart palpitations, dehydrated because you drank too much the night before.
Cranky.
I mean, it's not good. Right. It's not good. So anyway, I think, you know, I would say to anybody who, you know, if you only have a beer once in a while, you know, fine. If you, you know, drink a glass of wine at a restaurant once a week or whatever, you know, I'm not, you know, that's fine. But if you are in you and people know, you know, you know yourself. If you talk to your, you think about yourself, you know what your consumption's like. If you're drinking every day, even if it's one glass of wine, if you're drinking every day, you might want to consider taking a break right. and just, you know, give it a shot.
Right. Or even, I think it's interesting, or even even asking yourself that, it's, I love that conversation of even suggesting that, seeing what your reaction is, and right. that's going to be very telling. And I think also, I know you are talking about alcohol, but that I think is any substance or addiction or behavior. Like I was in teaching a graduate program once, and I said, what would it be like if I took your cell phones for a day? And like the daggers, like, you know, of just like, you know, that addiction can be so consuming, and some things yeah. like you're saying are more acceptable and more approved in society than others. But being able to have that conversation with yourself of saying, what would it be like if I stopped this? You know, does it bring anxiety, anger? Right. It would be interesting to see.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, when I, as soon as I told myself I needed to cut back, I wanted to double down. So, and you know, you're right about the addiction piece. I mean, I think about sugar, you know, oh my gosh. I mean, when I first quit drinking, I was eating cakes like there was no tomorrow because, you know, I needed that sugar. And it doesn't matter if it's scrolling, if it's working, if it's, you're right. And we are great at trying to be busy with other things. Right. And not, yeah.
And also, it, you know, and I think distraction and disconnection for a lot of people is, I don't want to feel the pain, or I don't want to yes. be with myself, or I don't want to deal with my trauma or my mental health or my physical issues or my abusive marriage or my dead end career. It's something that numbs the pain.
Yep. And it's, and I think that's why, like I said, after my sister died, I think that's when I really noticed that I was eating bad. I was drinking more, you know, because I was so sad. I mean, it was just my mom, then my sister. I mean, you know, those are big, major, yeah, you know, relationship and losses. And she was younger than me, and it was just so sad. And I think I was numbing, you know, I was just trying to cope. When I got off the alcohol, Patrick, the flood of emotions and the stuff to grief and all the things, it was pretty overwhelming.
And what helped you with that, and being flooded with that?
Yeah. So I mean, I did go see my therapist some, I'll be honest. I think that getting help when you need it, is so important, you know, to go and have somebody to talk to or whatever. But I also started doing healthier things.
Okay.
So when I quit drinking, I started exercising, and you know, the endorphins in that, I got into yoga. I got into, you know, some activities, which changed from just sitting at night, because, and I could go places, I could do things, because I couldn't drive, you know.
Oh, right.
So, I mean, if you think about all the things that are involved in it, and I did a lot of reading, and I did a lot of journaling and soul searching. I mean, it was really the self-development piece. I say I got alcohol out of the way so that I could really focus on, you know, making my life the best, and accepting myself, you know, I say with all my imperfections, because it's hard to, you know, not to look at yourself and see all the negative. And I suffered so long in that, you know, oh, you're this, you're that, but all the negative, his voice became my voice. And I don't know if my voice may have been before his voice. Do you know what I mean? And maybe that's how I ended up with him. But at the end of the day, I had to stop it. I had to stop the pattern of, oh, you're not good enough. All these limiting beliefs that we hold. And, oh, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. I could never talk on somebody's podcast. I could never show up there. I could never write a book. Nobody would like it. Nobody would, you know, you tell yourself such negative stories that you stop yourself from doing the things that you want to do.
Right.
And one of my clients gave me one of the best compliments, I guess. She said, you know, Janet, since I've been working with you, she said, you gave me permission to do the things I love. Wow, that made me just so happy.
Yeah.
But she's 75 years old, Patrick. She needs to get on it, right?
She's not stopping down. She's just getting started. That's exciting.
Right.
That's so amazing. And how powerful is that? You helped me get permission to be able to do things that I wanted. And that voice is so powerful of the judgment, the comparison of whatever you're working on. And it's like, you know, sometimes you just got to like throw it. It's like, who cares? Like, just get out of my own way and just jump in and try it and see. I was working on a project recently and it wasn't going the way I wanted. So, you know, that doubt came in of thinking, well, what if I fail?
Right.
And then I was walking my dog and I just had this moment of revelation of saying, but I can't possibly fail because I tried.
Right.
I was like, what? I was just like, it was kind of like I started seeing the sun a little bit brighter of how deep those negative thoughts can be. But you tried. So you can't really fail.
Yeah.
Because you did try.
Well, yeah, it's even like with this book, I've been working on it. And this is like the third rendition that I have finally, this is where I was finally happy that, okay, this is it, you know, kind of thing. And I got willing to put it out there, and then I got it done. And then I don't know how many weeks it took me to even think about putting it up, you know, and then, like I said, I got my copy today, but it's been out there for, you know, a week and I haven't told anybody. And, you know, it's those same things, Patrick. It's like, what if it's not good enough? What if people don't like it? What if I'm not a good writer? What if I made a mistake in it? What if, you know, what if, I mean, you know, obviously I paid an editor and all that kind of stuff, but I'm just saying it's that negative, that fear of not being good enough. But you know, that's where I have to say, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just me. And
yeah. And you're telling your story.
Yeah. It's my story. Yeah. So.
That's amazing. So tell me a little bit more about, I mean, you mentioned a little bit, how did the book come to fruition specifically?
Yeah. So honestly, it was before the pandemic. It was 2018 and I had quit my stressful job. It was after my sister had died. And, you know, my mom got a diagnosis. She was 59 and she had pancreatic pancreatic cancer. And they told her she had 6 months to live. She lived 10 months and died. Well, and then, you know, that was it 20 years ago. And then almost something identical happened with my sister in 2016.
Wow.
She got lung cancer. They said, you got 6 months to live. She lived, you know, about 10 months again. And I was just like, you know what, I'm next. I just felt really like, oh my gosh, that's what's going to happen to me. I'm working these stressful jobs. I'm just doing work. And somebody's going to give me this death sentence, and I'm never going to get to have any time off. I'm never going to get to do what I want. I'm never going to get to. And so I, at some point, I don't know why I did it or how I got the courage or whatever. My husband was very supportive, but I just quit my job. I just said, I'm bye. And they were like, what? I'm like, I didn't have a plan. I didn't have another job. I didn't have insurance. I didn't know what I was going to do.
Wow, a leap of faith.
Yeah, it was all I knew was in my mind, I was like, I'm going to take 3 months off and enjoy my life, not with a death sentence, just now. And, you know, because that was all I could think of. Well, once I got through the 3 months, I'm like, what do I want to do? You know, so I was trying to figure out, you know, what I wanted to do. And I said, you know what, I want to write a book. And so it was during that time that I started, but what I did was just threw out all the, you know, all the terrible things that happened. Right. And so I had a friend of mine who, you know, he has a PhD and he's an editor. And so I said, hey, would you mind reading this? And he read it and he was like, I don't know that you want. He didn't say don't share this, but he was like, this is pretty raw. He just kept like, you know. And so I thought about it and I thought, yeah, that, you know, because I went through the abuse, I went through all the just, you know, it was very therapeutic. Right. You know what I mean?
Yes.
To get it out, right? I wrote it all out, but I didn't, not really what I wanted to share with the whole world.
right. But a good jumping step.
Yeah. So then I thought, okay, it was after this last, you know, self-development journey. And I said, you know what? I know what I want. It was after I had quit alcohol. It was, you know, my life was changing. I was feeling so much better. I was like, you know what? I need to go back and kind of show where I've been, tell people, hey, if I can do it, you can do it, and help them through the, you know, here's how I did it. And so it became it's my story. And I used some of the, you know, things that I had already written and some of the stories, but then I moved forward with, hey, here's how it worked for me. This is what I do. This is how I, you know, and so it's part, you know, journey, my story, and it's part self-help book.
That's beautiful.
And that was it. You know, I knew that was it. I knew that was it. So that's how it came about.
Wow. I can't wait to get it. I'm so excited. Because we need more, right? I find in any clinical book I've ever read, the ones that stick with me are the ones where I can hear someone's story. Because then it's real.
Yeah.
And I can connect to their journey, to their pain, to their humanity, and to their resilience and their hope. And then you know, that's how I learn, where it's like, okay, how can I relate this to myself and then make it more applicable? So I'm very excited about this.
You know, I just kind of talk to you in the book.
Right.
I mean, I write like I talk. So it's not a PhD level, you know, some sort of, you know, fancy words in there. It's just like me and you talking.
Right. And I'm
really excited. I hope, you know, I mean, again, I've still got that a little bit of like, what are people going to think or whatever, but you know what, I had three people read it, you know, kind of my test group or whatever. And there were three ladies that were in kind of this, my group. And they all said, this is so inspiring. I love it. This is helpful. And so it gave me the courage to go ahead and push forward. So, wow.
Well, I'm so glad you did. I can't wait to get a copy.
Yeah.
This is so cool. So, I was just thinking too, as we were talking about, it's so mind blowing to me that the medical field has become probably one of the most stressful and I don't know what even adjective to use. Like, I want to say abused, but that's not the right word. But I just feel like anyone who I talk to in the medical field is just burnt. They're just exhausted. They're defeated. And what I keep hearing, and maybe you can share some of your experiences, it's never about really the clients or the treatment. It's always about the bureaucracy and management and the expectation that you're supposed to work an inhumane amount of hours and just shut up and smile and do it.
Yeah. It's really sad. I mean, I'm going to be 60 this year. So I've been in healthcare my whole life. My first job in high school, I worked at a physician clinic. And wow. And I've always worked in healthcare, almost every single job I've ever had, and working with doctors. And I was back in the day, and this is really making me feel old, but I actually worked for this older doctor and his new partner, and he was still bartering services for like eggs and stuff. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
You know, it was a small town. So,
right,
you know,
right.
But the young guy came in and, you know, got the computer system, and I helped and that poor old doctor was, but I mean, the point is that, you know, back in the day, doctors took care, they knew their patients, we have come so far in the opposite direction, and it's become, I've seen so many good nurses and good physicians who couldn't make the transition. You know, first it was the electronic medical records. Mm-hmm. I saw so many nurses. I mean, we all charted by hand. We all did our, you know, whatever. And these nurses were great nurses, but when the computer came in, they had no experience and they were expected to, you know, keep up and chart, and they couldn't do it. So we lost a ton of people there. Same way with these physicians, as reimbursement keeps getting cut with Medicare and all the, you know, the things that they're trying to do, the physicians have to either do more, you know, they are the service, right? They have to see more patients. Right. They don't have time. I mean, and so you see people who loved their patients and always took time with them, they're in there on their computers. Do they, I mean, you've been to the doctor. Do they don't have time to even look up at you. They're, you know, and so I think anybody who goes into healthcare to take care of people gets frustrated with the system that we're in.
So. And it is sad. I see that where I have known so many amazing nurses and people in the medical field who just have hearts of gold. And they do, they love what they do. They love the people. They love being in the healing field. But it gets to that point where they can't take it. Like right. Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, it just breaks them.
Yeah.
And I think COVID, you know, did a lot, but it also, you know, I think systems really need a revolution to say, hey, these are people too. Like we can't treat sick people with sick people.
Yeah. I tell you, the COVID situation was some of the worst. I have some really close friends who still work, you know, in ICU and some of the, and I mean, they would just get on beg, you know, that, gosh, people, please wear a mask, please, you know, stay home, please, whatever. I mean, just, they were seeing unprecedented amounts of patients. And so, you know, I don't know. I hope we've turned the corner a little bit, but the other thing is a lot of people are not going into medicine, Patrick, now because of this. And so it's getting shorter and shorter. You know, I mean, we have less and less clinicians because they, you know, people don't want to go into it. So I don't know, you know, it's sad, especially, you know, seeing it from where it was to where it is, but I will say that there are still so many wonderful caregivers out there. And, you know, once you're in it, you just can't stop.
Right. And so. I think what I'm seeing too, what I love is when, and I wish more insurances would do this, would cover different types of healing, like acupuncture, massage therapy, you know, all the different things that are really powerful and do help that might alleviate some of that tension on nurses and the medical staff. You know, it would just, that they need as well, right? To deal with the stress of being frontline.
I tell you, That is, don't get me on my soapbox about this, because to me, it's like, you know, we as the physicians and the healthcare community, we don't address the person as a whole. We just, they come in for this and we give them a pill or we give them a prescription. We don't, you know, how many times our diet and our lifestyle and all the things, the alcohol use, the, you know, the eating the bad foods. I mean, we do so many of these disease processes to ourselves that, but we don't address that as a healthcare society. You come in and you're overweight and you're drinking too much and you know, smoking, whatever you're doing, you know, they may say, hey, you should stop smoking, but they write your prescription for, you know, a cholesterol medicine, a blood pressure medicine, right. You know, and then you get diabetes, they give you diabetes medicine instead of, how about trying to reverse this? How about looking at your lifestyle? How about looking at your diet? How about looking at, like you said, alternative things? How about meditation or acupuncture or aromatherapy or some of the things that, you know, it doesn't cost anything, you know? So it's sad to me that they don't even consider, you know, prevention as you know, it's just about writing a prescription and getting out of there.
And it's interesting because I had a young doctor on during the last year. She, I think, had just graduated when she was on Friday Night Feels. So we were just talking about that. And one of her experiences was she was so surprised of the trauma going through her education and being pushed. And I'm sure as a nurse, you saw the same thing, like being put in a program where it's like, you have to do these 24-hour shifts. You have to do this, you have to do that. And she said, it's taken so long for me to like heal from that. And she goes, I know I'm going to have to probably do more work, but it's another part of the system that needs to be addressed that our providers need to be taught, hey, this is how you do self-care so you can have a life of longevity. Like you're saying, whether they have addiction issues or not, that longevity, that wealth, that healing is sadly undervalued and invaluable. Yeah.
It really is. And, you know, I think there is a lot of hope. I see, you know, as I started hiring physicians that were younger than me, you know, I started seeing that they would come in and a lot of them were like, you know what, I'm not going to work. I'm not taking call 30, you know, I'm not taking call every night. I'm only going to take call 10 days a month. I'm only going to work blah, blah, blah. Because I want to have my wife and kids, you know, so they talk about lifestyle balance, you know, I mean, the doctors back in the other generation just did it. I mean, just around the clock did whatever, but I think the new generation, the younger doctors are starting to, you know, put some boundaries and at least try, right, you know, to balance their, you know, their life. Because again, you know, I know that back in the day and in previous generations that you work and you missed out on so much with your kids. I mean, especially men, you know, and in the previous generations. I mean, and so I think, you know, I think there's a lot of changing going on in our society and it's not all for the bad. I mean, you know, there's some
hope. Good. We're fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
One other thing too, Janet, that I was wondering, and then I want to talk more about your Friday lives or your Facebook lives is, do you, in your experience, you know, eliminating alcohol, do you see alcohol as a coping skill in the medical field by professionals?
Oh, I've got some stories. You don't want to talk.
We'll have to have you come back and get into some of those Friday Night Feels after dark.
I tell you, you know, I remember working with some physicians and I mean, we all drank so much. We'd have these recruitment dinners. I talk about it in my book, how, I mean, we would drink so much that it's like, and then drive home, you know, I mean, I don't know. It is definitely a coping mechanism. And, you know, I think a lot of times it is the overachievers. I don't know if you've ever read the book, The Naked Mind by Annie Grace,
no.
But that was one of the first books that I read when I was trying to quit drinking or whatever.
Okay.
And man, her story was so intense. She said, you know, that she had to drink with her job almost because people, you know, everybody does it. And you look like, you know, you're not part of the group or whatever. And she drank, but it's a lot of times she said the overachievers, it's the people who are highly educated, the people who have all kinds of, you know, the high stress that do use alcohol to cope. So that's interesting when you picture or when you think about an alcoholic. Oh, you think about the guy in the, you know, in the park with his brown bottle or whatever, you know, his paper bag. Whereas the truth is, so many people who are very highly educated, who have great accolades and lots of letters behind their name, are using alcohol. You know, maybe they're not alcoholics, they're functioning alcoholics, or they're functioning, whatever. I mean, I don't even think the term alcoholic is a good one at this point. I think that it turns people away from even, you know, trying to look at their drinking.
Right.
So I think at the end of the day, just like I told you, if somebody came to me and said, hey, you're alcoholic, you need to go AA, I would have never done it. I wouldn't have done it because I didn't need it. I never got a DUI. I never had any financial problems. I went to work every day. That's not the same thing. But I think that piece, and you know, whether it's, like you said, whether it's addictions or whether it's something, it's so much pressure. There's got to be a pop-off valve, right? And if it's not something healthy, what's it going to be?
Right. And so can you tell me a little bit more, you know, kind of like segueing into, so you've written the book, you become the coach, you're helping people, you know, in different aspects of their wellness, you're the nurse, a nurse. And so what are these Facebook Lives that you're doing on Sunday mornings?
So every Sunday morning, I come on and I do just talk about different topics. It can be anything. This Sunday, I'm going to talk about how to survive summer.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, people do all kinds of crazy things in the summer, but one of the things that they do is immediately when you think of summer, you think of cold beer, barbecues, margarita, you know, frozen drinks. I mean, so what can we do? So that's one piece of it. The other thing is we put so much pressure on ourselves to have these vacations with our families, and we build these vacations up in our minds, and then we're all disappointed. We spend all this money and all this time preparing for our vacations, and then, you know, our expectations are not realistic, you know. And so I've got like I think it's about 10 tips that I walk through, things that you can do to you know, enjoy the summer. Most of the time, Patrick, in my sober Sundays, whether it's half the time, I don't even talk about alcohol. It's right. Just about hydration. It's about caring for yourself. It's about, you know, whatever the topic is. You know, last week I talked about freedom, you know, freedom from your bad habits, from the things that you tell yourself. You know, I remember saying to myself for years, you know, that I was, you know, I've got the fat gene. I'm always going to be fat. You know, my family was overweight, but that's what I told myself. Right. And of course you got to change the story. You got to tell yourself the new story.
Right. So, and that's so hard. Yeah. Why do you think that's hard for people in your experience to change the narrative?
I think that we somehow, some way in the back of, And it can be anywhere, right? It can be somebody told you something. It could be something you felt, a family member. This girl told me this story that she loved to sing, and she was in, I don't know if she was in middle school, high school. She went, you know, she started singing, and this music teacher told her that she wasn't a good singer and that she really should try something else. And she told me, she was in my self-development class, and she told me that all these years later, she loved to sing, but she would never sing publicly. And she started challenging it when we started talking and learning about these new beliefs and telling ourselves a new story and doing the things that we love. And she said, and you know what? She's singing in a community theater now. She's on stage. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I think I think part of the reason that we don't address it is because we don't know that we have the power to do it. Mm-hmm. I think that we just think that's the way it is. We don't challenge it, right? I mean, you know, I'm overweight. I'm always going to be overweight. I'm not athletic. I was always picked last in high school on the team. So I'm not coordinated. I'm not good. You know, whatever it is that we tell ourselves. And so we just stay in that and we keep it in our little box and we don't push out and try. And so I think I try, you know, to say you can do it, you know, give it a try, you know? And if you think about what kind of things did you do when you were a kid, before you drank, before you smoked, before you, you know, worked and did, what kind of things did you do that you love? Do you do any of those today?
Wow. Yeah, that's a really good question. That's also, it was funny. I worked with college students for a while with addiction. Well, not even addiction, it was a lot of education and preventative pieces. And, you know, I would see a lot where there was a lot of binge drinking. And, you know, we would, it's like, you know, I would kind of ask them the questions like, so let's say you had 15 drinks, like, would you drink 15 Mountain Dews? Would you drink 15 Cokes or 15 Red Bulls? And they're like, oh, no. I'm like, yeah, like, not, we normally don't drink 15 to 20 consumptions of something. Like, something's wrong here. It's not. And then you're having all of these negative consequences.
Yeah.
And it's not in a judgmental way. And I think historically, you know, long, you know, in the dark ages, there was that shame piece, you know, break them down and then rebuild them. And, you know, that doesn't work because there's already something not working that the addiction is latched onto. So we got to bring in hope, healing, and recovery in whatever approach that is. Of, we got to get this forgiveness. We got to heal. We got to figure out, how do we get fulfillment? How do we live without being something's puppet?
Yeah. And, you know, being a slave to our own, those own limiting beliefs, we're a slave to these things that maybe somebody like her teacher told her 30 years ago.
And I
guarantee if you saw him, he wouldn't even remember saying that. And yet it affected her life, you know? And so we need to challenge, and we need to empower people to challenge these thoughts about themselves and these limiting negative things that we tell ourselves. And I talk about it in my book, how, you know, so many times you think you're the only one who has that. And it's not until you get around some people who are vulnerable to, who are willing to share their feelings and their vulnerability. And then you're like, oh, wow. And you see, you know, like, look, here's Patrick. He's got this show. He's on the video. He's this, he's that, you know. But if I were to ask you, you know, there's times when you're nervous. There's times when you don't feel confident, you know, but we all look at each other as put together. And we all look at the Facebook people that aren't real.
Yeah, social media. And I think of the Wizard of Oz, don't look at the man behind the curtain. It's like, well, we all have a little piece behind the curtain that we have to see. And then we're all on a little bit more, you know, normalizing it.
We all
struggle with something.
But I think that that's a huge part of it, is trying to get people to realize that, you know, they are good right where they are, that there is, you know, to challenge the things, to go for the things they want to do and to do the things they want to do. And don't let fear or comparison or negative things that other people think or say do stop you, you know. It's hard though. I mean, you know, I'm saying it, but look at me, you know, I'm still like nervous too, you know. I mean, we're all in this together.
Yeah. And I think it's so exciting. And I think too, that's what one of the pieces too, that I love about coaching, because that's the one thing that I keep hearing is, you know, it's everyone's like, well, why do you do coaching instead of therapy? And it's probably just like nursing. It's like, it's a different vibe. It gives you a different skill set. It helps you to be there for people. I think people are a little more open to coaching in the supportive, because they want that you know, just like athletes, just like I remember I had someone who was on the show who said it was at the time of the Olympics. And he said, look at every athlete that's at the Olympic from around the world. They all have coaches.
Absolutely.
And don't we all deserve the same support for our goals, our dreams, and our, you know, ambition? And I just always love that.
I love that.
Yes, all deserve that.
It's true. And, you know, for me, the reason I think coaching is so cool is because it's not focused on the, you know, negative, the disease process about, you know, depression and, you know, all the other things that people who are just normal, I say, or just who don't have major, you know, mental health issues still need someone to talk to.
Right.
They still need to have space to think about what they want out of life, what their values are, you know, and giving them that space. I think that's the biggest thing that I do. I think that I'm sure you feel the same way, that letting them, because nobody listens to anybody anymore.
Right. And everyone, I think the need for support is greater than ever.
Agree.
So if someone was interested in wanting to know more about coaching or connecting with you, how would they get a hold of you, Janet?
So if you can remember Bliss Beyond the Buzz, you can find me anywhere. I've got, okay. That's my website. It's, you know, www.blissbeyondthebuzz.com. That's my Facebook page, Bliss Beyond the Buzz. I'm on Instagram. Okay. And my email address is info@blissbeyondthebuzz.com. That's, you can Google me. I'll come up any which way you want to reach out to me. I'm pretty responsive. And
all right, great. And what I normally do too is, you know, sometimes it's if people I usually follow, and in that way, if they have any questions, they can reach out to me as well. And then I can just connect you with anyone, because I'm just thinking there's just so many people I would love to introduce your book to that could probably relate to. So excited. I think the work you're doing is so beautiful and inspiring. So I'm so honored that you were able to not only join us for Friday Night Feels, but also share the premiere of your book, which I wish the greatest success. And, you know, to really just spread and help people to really find themselves into, you know, it sounds like a really love-based and, you know, approach of, this isn't about shame or judgment or no. anger. It's about healing those wounds to be who you're meant to be, which is beautiful. So congratulations.
Thank you so much, Patrick. I appreciate you inviting me, and I'm glad we were able to connect on this, and I wish you great success.
Thanks.
And I think we're just connected, see, with our backgrounds and stuff.
So yes. I always ask, I have one final question that I always ask all of my guests.
Okay.
And what is one piece of advice that you would like to have the audience leave with tonight?
Okay. This is the thing that I would say is, it's a three-stepper, but drink 8 ounces of water a day. Walk 20 minutes a day, or move your body 20 minutes a day, and write 3 things that you're grateful for. Those three things, if you do those for just a couple weeks consistently, it's going to change your life.
Oh, I love that. That's so beautiful. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for joining us on Friday Night Feels. It's been an honor having you here tonight.
All right. Thank you, Patrick. We'll see you.
Yes. And thank you to everyone who watches and supports. And just remember, we're on the YouTube if you want to watch it, or also on the podcast platforms. And just a quick plug, I talked about this last time, for anyone who might be interested, friends of mine in South Africa are working on something called Mandala Monday, which is the 18th of July, which helps raise money for the South African AIDS orphans. And so basically it's, you know, you make a donation, and if you're doing any walking, running, or anything like that, it's a great way to give back. I think the donation is like $6, which I think for most of us is like a latte. So if anyone's interested in getting involved with that, please, I'm just trying to support it for the kiddos. Just reach out to me so we can, you know, help the little ones as well. So I hope everyone has a beautiful weekend, and we'll see you next time here on Friday Night Feels.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.